Our next presentation is by Mandy Baer.
Good morning, everyone. This research is going to be building on some of my research during my PhD, which was part of the SCRI Mines project, where we were looking at using soil moisture sensors to automate irrigation for water savings. As part of this, we found that you can use deficit irrigation or moderate irrigation to have substantial water savings. But we also were seeing some interesting things in terms of plant growth and how that's affected by volumetric water content. So what you can see in the picture here, these were some of the plants from the study. So the 45 here was our high water content, but what we actually found were that the plants around the 30-35 were actually maybe more of the desirable size. So in terms of production, we want to think about not just what's going on during production, but the next step when we're taking it to a retail setting. Those 45% plants were very tall, very leggy. Most likely they would want pruned, both from a visual standpoint so that they would be more appealing to the customer. But we'd also want to think about shipping. Something that tall, we're going to fit less of on a truck. That's going to add to our customers' shipping cost. So we could actually be more preferential to use one of those lower water contents where we may not have to prune. So part of this led to a question, is this something we can then use to, as a means of growth control, as a sort of a tool to use these soil moisture sensors, not just for water savings, but as a means of growth control. And depending on the crop, this might mean either hand pruning, which can be very costly to growers, or PGR applications that might be able to be reduced or taken out. Alam et al. Looked at this with poinsettias. They did find the potential for using deficit irrigation during certain times of production to slow down the growth of the poinsettia. One of the things with poinsettia, though, is that they have very specific height ranges that you're aiming for, so they were able to keep them within growth curves and really alter those water contents at specific times. When we're thinking more of nursery production, we don't necessarily have specific sizes that we're aiming for, so it's not quite as exact. What you're seeing in the bottom picture is another of my earlier studies where we were growing plants at 20, 30, 40, and 50% volumetric water content. This was an outdoor study, and one of the interesting things that popped up along with this, you can see the second plant to the left there, that was the 30%. This was over the summer in Georgia, very little rain, very late in the cycle after the upper plants had finished blooming. All of a sudden, the 30% were all in bloom because we'd had a 2-inch rainfall. And so this kind of made me start to wonder, well, what might be the impact on flowering? Could we use adding irrigation later to maybe bolster flower production? So this is another tool that we could have for production if we're sending plants out to a retail setting and we want to make sure they're in bloom, because that increases the likelihood of sale at that time. Is that something else that could maybe be altered? Another question that kind of came along at the tail end of this is, as I'm out visiting a lot of retail nurseries, we find that irrigation practices are quite variable. So in terms of production, even if you have a dry grower or a grower that chooses to keep plants well-watered, most likely the plants are going to be fairly consistently well-watered or grown on the dry side. But when you take them out into the retail setting, they might suddenly be flip-flopped. It might be vice versa, so that those well-watered plants may suddenly be very poorly watered, or it might be vice versa. A couple of my local garden centers tend to be quite on the over-irrigation side that you can see from those two pictures. So one of my questions here was, if we are growing plants either well-watered or the opposite of drought stress, what happens once they move them out to the garden center, and what impact might that have on the plant growth that would then possibly change the salability of those plants in that setting? So for this study, I wanted to compare growth, but specifically flowering. A lot of the previous research using soil moisture sensors has looked at overall growth, but hasn't necessarily quantified the impact on flowering. And I wanted to use altering volumetric water content thresholds during production. So the plant material was Salvia East Friesland. These plants were originally potted up in September of 2016. grown in a greenhouse at the University of Massachusetts. I had a few issues, so the plants were grown out for 2 months and then cut back and refertilized before the actual study began in February. So they were allowed to resume growth for a month before the irrigation treatments were actually applied in February. Irrigation was controlled by soil moisture sensor automated irrigation system. Sensor readings were taken every hour. The readings were then compared to a program threshold. If the threshold was below that program threshold, a signal was sent to a multiplexer and a data logger to then have the relay driver open up the solenoid valve for that particular line. Irrigation would occur over a minute, and 30 milliliters of water was applied per irrigation event. So I had four irrigation treatments, two controls, one of them kind of a slight deficit irrigation, similar to what Andrew was talking about about 25%, so the plants were grown the entire time at 25%. Then I had an upper control of 38%. For my graphs, these will be abbreviated LL and HH. The other two treatments were plants that were initially grown at the 25% for 2 weeks and then switched to the 38% for 4 weeks. And the second treatment was the opposite. The plants were grown at 38% for 2 weeks and then 4 weeks at 25%. So this was hopefully looking at what might happen if we suddenly switched what the water content was during production. The experiment was set up as a randomized complete block design with three replications. And statistics were analyzed in SAS using two keys. To look at the water contents here, these were my thresholds. So you can see the plants were well watered at the start there, and it took a little bit of time for them to settle out to their treatments. What you're seeing in the middle part here is when the thresholds got switched. So the ones that were at the low very immediately irrigated quite frequently during the course of that day. I believe they somewhere usually between 10 to 15 irrigation events for those as they shot back up to the other water content. And then obviously it took a little bit more time for the 38% to start to settle out down to the 25. But we can see that they did maintain the thresholds fairly well. This is a zoomed-in graph at looking at just the few days around when the irrigation set point switch occurred. You can make it out the day that it occurred. It's kind of the light gray bar in the background there. So again, you can visualize that blue bar is the one that moved from low to high, so that we do see very quickly much irrigation is occurring here, whereas the green bar is the one that moves from high to low, so it actually takes a little bit longer to plateau out there in terms of the irrigation. Overall, we do find that the low-high irrigation actually had the highest cumulative irrigation, followed by high-high, high-low, and then low-low, as would be somewhat expected. And again, you can see the little bit of the joggle here during the switches as they were occurring. In terms of cumulative irrigation, the low treatment, what you're seeing in the bars, the bottom part of the bars are before the irrigation switch. The upper bars are after the irrigation switch occurred. So this was significant with the low-high, high-high, and high-low not being different, but then the low-low being lower than the rest. So we did see that we had some water savings keeping it completely at the low-low, and the high-low did make a little bit of a difference as well. But overall, the high-low, high-high, and low-high were not different. In terms of height, in these graphs here, the left-hand graph is the height over time. The right is just the final height. In terms of final height, this was not significant, although pretty darn close there. In terms of it, visually, I'll show some pictures later, and when it comes to a retail setting, we are concerned visually with what's going on in terms of our plants, so this will kind of play a factor later. But you can see a little bit of the switch going on here as well in terms of those treatments changing as the time went on. In terms of dry weight, we did find, too, a significant difference here. Those low-low plants were smaller plants. The high-high and low-high were larger in terms of dry weight. Compactness, this is a measure of looking at plant height to dry weight. The Lolo were a more compact plant than the rest of the treatments, with the low-high being the least compact plant. But this was not significant, actually. The letters in there. Average flower stem length, so starting to look at some of these sort of flower measures that I was actually concerned about with starting this experiment, we did find that the average flower stem length was significantly different, with those Lolo treatments having shorter flowers. The switching set points did not seem to be making much of a difference in terms of the flower length in terms of the stems. I also looked at the branched flower stems, seeing so any of the flowers that had side flowers coming off of them, this did make a significant difference. Looks like I put my letters on the wrong graph here. So the Lolo did have less branching going on in terms of the floral stems. Number of flowers was actually not significant. So we did see that between all of the plants, it was fairly similar in terms of number of flowers. Now to look at the pictures a little bit, like I mentioned, once we're thinking retail setting, we do need to be very concerned with what our plants actually look like and whether or not they're going to be selling. I'll show a better picture later, but one of the interesting things I started to find with the one as I switched from the low to high is those plants ended up being very floppy. Most of those flower stems they're very wide plants, and this would not be very desirable to bring it into our retail setting. And that was fairly consistent with all of those plants that moved from 25 to 38. Visually, you can tell that size-wise, no, they're not very different. They are outside of the Lolo is a bit on the smaller side, just taking a look at them. So some of the conclusions, dry weight, average flower length, and number of branch flowers were significant. Number of flowers, compactness, and height were not. The low high here, here's a really good example of just how floppy these became. So this definitely would be something that I think would overall impact the salability of these plants and would not be desirable. Looking here, again, the low, it definitely was smaller, but I actually thought they were the best looking plants and probably would actually sell better in a retail setting. The high still looked fine. That's what you're seeing in the other picture there. But so this does, again, speak of using lower water contents and still producing a very good-looking plant. I've actually been looking at other genus as well, wondering is this just more of a specific response that maybe the salvia was having. A lot of variability actually has been going on with these. I looked at Echinacea powwow wildberry and Hellenium Mardi Gras. You can see some of the various pictures on the bottom there. For the Hellenium, this would be the high, low, high, low, low. It was just really variable with what I was finding. The Hellenium, I actually had a lot of significant results with them. Echinacea, not many at all. I did run into some fertilization issues with the Echinacea that may have came into play. But it does look like this might be something that's a little bit on the variable side in terms of specific genus of plants. And with that, I'd be happy to take any questions. John? The question was, what was my substrate? It was Fafford Nursery Mix, so a bark peat mix. Yeah, it was kind of I was banking on about the 6-week production for them, and the round I'm doing now, I actually switched at 3 weeks to see if that's going to start making a difference. So it was more just a random choice than really having a lot of. I think it could, you know, thinking back to some of my previous studies, it was really making a big difference in terms of making sure you had good establishment before using some of those really low water contents. I'd be interested, it's interesting, Andrew pointed it out as well, that 25 is barely deficit. I'd like to back it off a little bit, too, to see if that makes a little bit more of a difference, because they were definitely growing just fine at the 25%. So, Andrew. So the question was, is establishment maybe a factor here? The Hellenium and the Echinacea have not been nearly as well established, and that doesn't seem to be playing much of a factor, actually. So I would have thought that was going to be playing much more. I was expecting those 25% to be much smaller. So.